We're going to learn Daf Ayin Tes in Masechtas Ksubas. We're actually going to start from three lines from the bottom on Ayin Ches Amud Beis, where we left off. Now, the Gemara is talking about over here whether there are certain properties where the husband understands that he's not going to get from his wife. For various reasons, either she gave them away, or the last thing that the Gemara just said before the bottom of the Gemara was that, according to Reb Shimon, it depends on whether they are, so to speak, yoidin or not yoidin, whether they are not or not known, whether they are known or not known, and the Gemara says it depends on whether they're b'medina sayam, so far away. So the way I understand this is that because they're far away, he doesn't know about them, and therefore has no expectation that they will be his. In any event, we see that there are certain lands, certain properties that the wife can own before the marriage, that by the time they get married, the husband has no expectation of getting them, and therefore they do not belong to him, or he does not have rights in. So on that note, the Gemara now tells us a story. Ahi itza, so again, three lines from the bottom. Ahi itza deboi ditavrechinu lenichse migavro. There was this woman who was getting into a second marriage, and she had property from her first marriage, or she had property from beforehand, and she didn't want the second husband to be entitled to take the property. She had her own children, and she wanted the children. They wanted the children to get the property. So, the tavrchinu means that she wanted to run away. She wanted the property run away from this second husband. That meaning, in the event that she dies, she didn't want that husband, that second husband, to yarshen her. So, what did she do? Kosvinu lebarta. She went ahead and wrote a shtar to give the property to her daughter, Intzava, and then she went ahead, after she wrote this shtar, she went ahead and got married, Vigrisha, and then she got divorced. So, Rashi points out that, okay, because this is actually Machlokes Rishonim, what she did exactly over here, but Rashi's shita is that what she did was she went over to Edim before she gave the property away and told the Edim that, by the way, I'm just writing this shtar to give to my daughter so that it's protected from my husband. But I don't really mean to give it to my daughter. That's the way Rashi learns. The Rajba and Tosfos and the Ran and all these different shitas argue on Rashi and say they actually... There are actually various shitas among the Rishonim exactly what she did or didn't say. According to some Rishonim, she didn't say anything. According to the Ran, she did say something, but not quite. She didn't say it all the way. That she wants the property back. She just said, "I'm doing this to protect my property," and so on and so forth. So the Machlokes Rishonim exactly what she said. But Rashi, in this context, is, so to speak, the most extreme in the sense that she spells it out. She tells the Edom exactly what she's doing, and that's how she wants to protect her property. Now, of course, the sugya of our Gemara is not about what she said. The sugya of our Gemara is about whether the shtar itself counts, whether it worked, whether it helped to accomplish what she was trying to, or rather, should I say, whether the shtar itself is a valid shtar that the daughter gets to keep this property or not. So now, takes us to the top of Ayin Tes Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, okay, so now, again, our story was that the woman got divorced, so she wants her property back, because she was just protecting it from this husband who no longer is in the picture. So also the comment of Rav Nachman, so, she brought the shtar to Rav Nachman, Kare, Rav Gamaliel, Rav Nachman le shtaro. So Rav Nachman went ahead and ripped up the shtar. He said, yeah, this is a pointless, useless shtar, because it's only there to protect her from the husband. The husband's not here. I don't need the shtar anymore. So the daughter is not entitled to this property. So, also Rav Anon lekamei de Mar Ukva. So Rav Anon went to Mar Ukva, which, by the way, if you remember on Daf Samach Tesamaveis, Rav Anon also ran to Rav Ukva when he was called Anon. And said, you know, what's he doing over here? Anyway, so this is another story with Rav Anon running to Mar Ukva, who was the Reish Galusa in those times. He was the head, or Reish Abbez, and Rashi says. Okay, so he went to Mar Ukva and he says, Amalei Chazim Mar Nachman Chaklo Let's see what Rav Nachman, or Mar Nachman, he didn't even give him the title of Rav. He said, look at what Rav Nachman, who doesn't know halacha, is ripping up people's shtaris. What do you mean? There's a shtar over here. How could he go ahead and rip up the shtar? The daughter has a valid, what the Ravanan considered to be a valid shtar. How could he go ahead and rip it up? Omar Lay, so Mar Ukva said to him, Emily, Ize Gufa de Uvda Hechiavda. You tell me exactly the details of the story, what happened over here. There seems to be more to the story. So Omar Lay, Hachi de Hechiavda. So Ravanan said, yeah, this is the story. The mother wrote it away, and then the daughter, and then she got divorced, and now the daughter wants to claim that she owns it. Omar Lay, so Mar Ukva said, Shtarim Avreches Kamris. You're talking about a shtar that is written solely for the purpose of keeping property away from a husband. And I say the word husband, keeping the property away from the husband so that the second person should not be entitled to it. Hachi Amar Rav Chaniloi Bar Idi Amar Shmuel. This is what Rav Chaniloi said. Moira Hayroani. I am somebody who paskins generally, and I have a rule. If I ever get a shtar that is written solely just for the purpose of hiding property somewhere else, akrinu, I will rip it up. Meaning, I don't believe that that's a real shtar, and the person who is receiving the benefit of that shtar cannot rely on it because it's not really meant and intended to be a real transfer. It is meant to be just there to keep the property away from the next guy. So, yeah. So we just said that he said that again, this is my rule. My rule is that if a shtar mevrachas comes in front of me, I rip it up. I don't consider this really a valid shtar. The recipient should not have expectations to really receive it because the sole purpose of this shtar is really only to keep it away from that third party, to keep it away from the husband or, in this case, from the husband. Again, now according to Rashi, this makes a lot of sense, remember, because according to Rashi, she specifically told Adim it's not a real shtar. So according to Rashi, it's very easy to understand. According to those Rishonim, that she didn't really spell it out so clearly, it's a little bit, the Gemara is, so to speak, a bigger chiddush. Okay, let's continue. The Gemara says, Amalei Rav Lerav Nachman. Rav says, one second, that's a very nice rule, but let's look at it in context. Time of my, what's the reason why a person, why a shtar mevrachas to get rid of the collateral generally works? Because a person's not going to give away their property and leave themselves with nothing. That's where I give it to a third party, where I, in this case, remember, he gave it to his daughter, but if I give it to some person walking down the street, obviously I didn't really mean to give it to that person. I really only meant to give it to that, well, I guess in the English language we would call a straw man. I didn't really mean to give it to that person. I only meant to use them for my purposes. But when you're giving property to your daughter, your own flesh and blood, you usually do mean to really give the property to your daughter. And therefore, even this shtar, I should not rip up and I should leave it, let it go to the daughter. So the Gemara says, true, that's a valid point. However, afilu hachi, b'mokoim barta nafsha adifala. So when it comes to her daughter, she still has to take care of herself. Because over here, what's going to happen is, remember, after this divorce, this wife no longer has support from a husband. She has to support herself. If she doesn't have any property, she can't live. So it's true that I really want to give money to my children, and parents, you know, normal parents giving things to their children all the time. That's true. But I can't afford to give everything to my children to leave myself with nothing. So in this case also, I didn't mean really to give it away in a context where I'll have nothing. So we'll see, let's continue to get a final clarification. Meisvei, but the Gemara says, it's not always true, because it says, Haroitza shetavrich, tavriach nechsei mibalo, a woman doesn't want the property to go to her husband for whatever reason. Kate said he oisa, so what should she do? So she should write the shtar where it looks like a matana, but again, you tell the person, I'm not really giving you this property, I'm only giving this you the shtar so that it looks like I gave away the property. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that works. And the Chachamim say, the person who receives this shtar is able to laugh and say, oh yeah, you know why it looks like you gave away your property? Haha, because you did give away your property. I get to keep it. So once again, we see No, sorry, I said it backwards. Rotza masachek ba, that, yeah, right. That, right, and the person, the recipient, is able to say, I'm keeping it. Ad, unless, now how do I make sure that the recipient can't keep it? Ad shetichtav loy, mehayoyim, likeshe erzo. When she says, I'm only giving it to you from today, as long as, until I want it. Now, Rashi has an interesting way of learning kisha erza. Who's I want it? So, Rashi learns, the way Rashi learns, again, other Rishonim don't learn this way, even in Rashi the question is what the girsa is, but they learn that likisha erza means when the recipient himself says, I want the property. What does that mean? She instructs the person to say, I don't want the property. If I tell you to say you don't want the property, then you have to say you don't want it, and therefore it reverts back to me. So that way, it is a good transfer until you say, I don't want it. Okay, that is the way Rashi learns. It's a little bit interesting that Rashi learns that it's the recipient that gets to say whether I want it or I don't want it. The simpler reading in Rashi would be that she gets to say, I want it, meaning I want it back. Okay, and that would be saying, I'm giving it to you unless and until I say I want it back. Then I say I want it back, then I rewrite the whole shtar, then the shtar is not a good shtar. In any event, we see that according to the Chachamim, right? We see that according to the Chachamim, it is considered a 100% valid shtar, and it goes completely unless she specifically writes in the shtar itself that it's only for a time. And it's only until and unless I say I want it back. Now, Taima, as the Gemara now says, Taima, the Kosva Lehachi. So we see according to the Chacham, it's because you wrote this in the shtar. But if you don't write this in the shtar, we see that it is a valid shtar. So we see that a shtar mevreches, even though the purpose of it was only to get rid of it for a period of time or to prevent a certain thing, but lamaisa, it's a good shtar. It should be a real transfer. So why over here does the mother get it back? I'm a Rav Zeira. So Rav Zeira finally answers, like Kasha, this is, you have to understand the context. Habakula habamiktsasa. Okay, it depends. So now this comes out, Rav Zeira now is defining the entire Gemara. He says, this whole business really depends on what she gave away. If she literally, what do they call it, she gave away the farm, I think that's the expression in English, if she gave away everything, so then she obviously never meant to leave herself high and dry, that if she's divorced and now she's back on her own two feet to have nothing. That doesn't make any sense. Nobody would do that. Nobody would do that, even to their daughter, no mother, whatever. So obviously that makes it clear that this is only a shtar for a purpose of keeping it away from the husband, and that's all it was ever meant for, and now that she needs it, she's going to get it back. However, if she was only giving away a specific property, but she had other property, then, according to the way Rav Zeira learns, and that would be the Maskara of the Gemara, then we would understand and we'd expect that was a real giving away. Even though the purpose of this was to only hide it in a tax shelter or whatever she's doing over here, you know, there was a different reason why she gave it away. I don't care what the reason is. She gave it away. Lamaisa, she gave it away even to her own daughter, or certainly to her own daughter, maybe to a third party, maybe not, but certainly to her own daughter, she did really mean to give it away. So that comes out. So the nuance at the end of the Gemara is it depends on how much she gave away. Now, finally to the question that we asked before. V'loikananinu, kananu loikeach, Nikrinubal. So now, if according to all of this stuff, there are, whatever your case may be, whether it's this last case or all cases, that we say that it wasn't a real transfer, so then why doesn't the husband get it, Lamaisa? At the end of the day, she didn't really transfer it away from him. The husband should get it. So Amar Abaya, says, awesome, we make this transfer, kenechosan she'ein yaduin. We look at this labal. We look at this as property that the husband doesn't know about. Ve'aliba de Reb Shimon. And we're following Reb Shimon. It's an interesting, again, machlekes rishonim, whether there's a vav here over here or not. Whether we say ve'aliba de Reb Shimon or just aliba de Reb Shimon. Comes out an afkamina whether we can apply this rule to other cases as well, or whether it applies only in this case over here. But anyway, the simple reading and the girsa that we have, we're going according to Reb Shimon. Which means if you don't hold like Reb Shimon, then this rule is not true. But if you hold of Reb Shimon's rule, And according to Reb Shimon, who holds that there is a difference between whether the husband knows about it or not, or in our language, whether the husband expects it or not. So then, since she tried very hard for the husband not to get it, the husband kind of takes the position that he's not expecting to get it. And therefore, since even though the recipient doesn't receive it, it's not a valid transfer, still the husband doesn't expect to get it. So since he doesn't expect to get it, lemaisa, he does not get it. Okay, so that's the conclusion of the Gemara. Zok the next Mishnah. Naflu lo ksofim, let's say she gets money that she's bringing into the marriage. Yilokach behen karka. So the general rule is you don't want money lying around because money just depreciates. So the husband takes the money, buys a piece of land, u'oichol peiros, and then the husband gets the benefit, the profits from that land. Peiros hatulushim in akarka. Now, if there's already, let's say she brought in a piece of land itself. Again, it doesn't really have to be physical land, but let's talk about land. It could be, for example, an apartment building that payroll over there would be the cash, the profits, the cash that comes in. But let's talk about land itself.
The revenue.
So the payrus are talushim in akarka. The payrus that are already detached from the land, that means they already become their own produce, their own revenue. Yilokach ben karka, once again, the husband has to take that because she's bringing that into the marriage. The husband has to take that, buy land with it, v'hu eichel payrus, and he gets to eat the benefits, the profits from that land. However, payrus are mechubarim b'karka, if the payers are still attached, so let's say rent that hasn't yet been paid, and she brings that into the marriage, we look at the land, we look at the land, how much it would be worth without the payers, how much it's worth with the payers. So obviously with the payers it's worth more, that's worth a certain dollar amount, that's X. So that X, we look at, that's what she's bringing into the marriage. And that X, that value, that difference, that delta, becomes a value that she's bringing into the marriage, and the husband has to take that value and buy something that can produce with it. And once again, the Karen belongs to her, the principal amount belongs to her, that's hers forever, and the husband, once again, eats the revenue, the payers that are produced from that. That's Reb Meir's approach. No, if she's bringing land in, even though it's still attached, that belongs to him because that's the revenue is going to come in, so she gets the land. But anything that's it's going to produce, even if it didn't come off the land yet, that's when it becomes produced. When it does detach, he'll keep it. But if it's already detached, you know, the bank she has in a bank account, that already is considered hers because she is bringing that independently into the marriage, and therefore so only those things that were pre-detached from the Karen, from the principle itself. That's the Chacham say. Reb Shimon has a third approach. He says, and we'll see what the machlekes in the Gemara is. Malkam sheyafakoycha b'chinis sasoi. If we consider it his when she brought it into the marriage, hayrakoycha b'tziyasa. So at the end of the marriage, he gets the opposite. So then it becomes. Then he has to return it to her. If it's his, if it's considered part of his estate coming into the marriage, then it's not his when he has to give it back to her. So if it wasn't considered his, meaning it still belonged to her, was considered her estate, so then if it was hers, it's considered detached and separate, then it's his on the way out. Okay, it's out in the Gemara itself. The Mishnah itself, rather, gives an example. Peiros amechubar on the karka, and he says, Reb Shimon spells it out. If they were still attached to the ground, v'chnisoso shaloi, since the expectation is that it's going to become his, and therefore he gets to eat it during the marriage, and he doesn't have to repay her for that. But if they get divorced, and there are peiros that are attached to the land, then she gets it on the way out. She keeps the peiros, and the opposite is true. V'atulushim in akarka, those peiros that are already detached, v'chnisoso shaloi. When they're getting married, those are hers because they're separate. So then he takes it before they get divorced. He gets to keep it, and he doesn't have to return it. Okay, so we'll see what the nuance of the machlekes is on Amud Beis in a moment. So now, first of all, the Gemara starts off with this concept. Once we're talking about Karen, what's more important? Who gets the right to decide what we're going to buy? Pshita aru ubati aru. Interesting. So the Gemara says that if there's a question whether they're going to buy land itself, what is he going to do with this money? The Gemara says that he buys karka. What kind of karka are we talking? Land. Land can mean different things. So she wants, or one of them wants, that they should buy land that they can cultivate, and the other one wants to buy land that they could build houses on. So the Gemara says, Ara, then you buy land that could be cultivated, because the Gemara's approach to this is, and I'm just gonna keep it at that, the Gemara's philosophy is that houses go down in value. As you know, those people who are into the taxes, you know, you take the diminution in value, you take it as a tax write-off every year, so they go down in value. Whereas land continues to produce every year. So therefore, that's the preference. Okay, next. Bati vidikli, what if it's a choice of building houses or trees? Bati, you build houses, they keep their value better. Dikli vilni, what if it's a palm tree versus just any random regular tree? Dikli, then obviously palm trees last longer, they're considered better, so you buy the palm trees. Ilni the gufni, what about if the trees versus a grapevine, a field? So then, ilni, you buy the trees. Abazardoso uperi de carvery. So now, what about if you have the trees that produce uzradin? Okay, some sort of tree. Uperi de carvery means that you have a fish pond, where the point is that the fish reproduce and you're able to continue fishing from this land. So, what is that considered? Is that considered karka itself? Is that karen? Are the fish itself that reproduce over here, are they considered the principal, or are they considered the interest, the extra? So, amri la peri, machlif. Peri. Some consider that the produce, and therefore the husband can fish the pond all he wants. Vamri la karna, and some say no. The amount of fish that are in the pond when she brings them into the marriage, that is considered, you know, maybe she has a salmon farm or something. So that's considered the Karen. He can't touch the Karen, and he can only get what those fish produce. Okay, so it's a question that specifically whether that's considered the extra, the Karen, the principal, or the interest. Now, Klo de Milsa. So here's the rule if you want to know what, because obviously there's 100,000 examples. We're not going to get into each one of them. So the rule is like this. Klo de Milsa, the rule is like this. Gozei machlif, peir. If it's something that is replaced, let's just give one example so we have it in our mind. An apple grows on the tree, you take the apple off the tree next year, a different apple grows there. So that is obviously peri, that's a fruit. If it's something that does not get replaced and replenished, so then that becomes the karen itself, and then you have to use that to produce something else. So that's the general rule. Again, you can figure out how to apply it in the real world, but those are the rules. Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Aishia, Amar Rav Yanai. In the name of Rav Yanai, the Amrila. Some people say it's Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Aishia, Amar Rav Yanai. So that it was Rav Abba that said this. Hagoinev. Now let's turn to the Ayin Tesama base. Hagoinev Vlad Behemus Malug. So again, Malug is those properties that the wife brings into the marriage, which we understand and expect that the husband can use during the marriage, but if the marriage ever ends, they have to be returned to the wife. Okay, so now, somebody steals the child of the Behemus Malug, meaning she brought in an animal, let's call it A, she brought in animal A, and animal A had a child, had B, and somebody stole B. Now, who are they stealing from? Are they stealing from the husband or are they stealing from the wife? Basically, we need to define what's considered, whether this is Karen or Peri. Peri belongs to the husband, Karen belongs to the wife. So we just need to define this in this context where it produced a child. So, somebody steals it, who do they pay back to? Mashan tashlume kefol leisha. Oh, they pay it back to the wife, which means we consider this Karen. We consider even the child to be Karen. So the Gemara says that the problem is like this. Come on, loiker abanu v'loiker chananya. It doesn't work out like anybody's shitas. We'll see the shitas in a second. But why would you consider the baby of an animal to be considered the Karen itself? So, because as the Gemara says, let's bring the shitas. The Tanya we learned in a Braisa. Vlad behemus malug labal. The first shita is that you have the child of an animal that belongs to the husband. That's classic peiros. That's what it produced. Vlad shivchus malog leisha. Okay, we're going to get into a side point that if she has a maidservant and that maidservant has a child, again, what is the slave considered? Is the slave considered Karen? Or since she produced a child, or is that considered peiri? Is that considered revenue, something else? So he makes, so the chachamim make a distinction between an animal which is meant to produce versus a shivcho, which is just the child as a continuation, as we'll see in a second. B'chananya ben achi yashia oimer, Omar, he says, asu vlad shivchos malug ki vlad behemos malug. He says, no, there's no difference. A child is a child, it's always considered peiros. Anyway, so we see over here that the child that is produced by an animal or a slave is considered peiros. So why is the ganav paying kefil to the wife? It should be paying the kefil to the husband. So the Gemara answers, no, afilu tema divrei hakol peiros, even if everybody agreed that this was considered peiros, tikinu le rabbanon peirid, sorry, divrei hakol. You could say afilu tema divrei hakol. I put the comma in the wrong place. Afilu tema divrei hakol. You could say this is everybody. It works even according to the chachamim and the rabbanon and the chananya. Peirid tikinu le rabbanon. The rabbanon say the husband gets the direct revenue. Peirid the peirid loy tiknu rabbanon. But the revenue, that's not what the husband gets. And therefore, somehow the revenue produces revenue, so then that really goes back. That's considered principal. You reinvest it back in the company. That's considered the wives. So 1 second. Okay? So that's the Gemara's answer over here. So basically what we're saying is, kefil, let me finish. Kefil is something that gets produced from the peiros. Obviously the baby belongs to the husband. But this is something extra that the peiri itself produced, so then that's considered extra, and that extra becomes invested back as principal. Bishloima, let's just talk about this machloikis itself, the difference between the vlad of a behemoth versus the vlad of a shifcha. Bishloima l'chananya, haynu d'loi chashina l'miso. So l'chananya is very clear. He says the child is considered peiri, or more importantly, actually, the mother, A, the behema A, and the shifcha itself, we're not worried that this person's ever gonna die. She gets to, that is considered Karen, that belongs to her, and we view it as if that item is gonna last forever, even though we all know that a behema doesn't live forever, and a shifcha doesn't last forever. But, for my purposes, we're gonna consider that Karen, at least Chananya is consistent. El Rabbanon, but according to the Rabbanon, why do they make a distinction between the behema and the shifcha? Icha shirin lemiso. If they're worried that the let's call it the animal is going to die, afilu vlad behemus malug nami loy, then the husband shouldn't get to keep the child either, because the wife has to be left with something. She needs some principle. The child, so to speak, replaces the mother. So that we should consider the child to be considered the Karen. And if we're not worried that anybody's going to die, we're just going to consider things status quo, and the Karen's going to be there. Afilu vlad shivchos malug nami. So then we should consider the vlad of the shivcha also should be considered peiros. Should be considered peiros, because she'll have her Karen. She'll be able to keep the shivcha herself. The child should be considered peiri. The husband should get it. So why do the Rabbanah make a distinction between the animal's child and the shivcha's child? So the Gemara answers, lo yilum chashina l'miso. We obviously do worry about the fact that it's going to die and the principle is going to disappear. V'shani behema de'ika oiro. Okay, so the Gemara is being mechadish a new thing. That, you're right. Sometimes principle does get diminished. It does over time go down in value, go down in what it can be. Over here, the animal will always, there'll always be something, because there'll be the skin. So even if the animal dies, you'll be left with something. And what the Gemara is being mechadish over here is, as long as some of the original item is still there, that's considered protecting your Karen. So it's true, the animal itself will die and it won't be able to have babies or anything else. But lemaisa, you'll be able to make a rug out of it, you'll be able to make something out of it, shoes or whatever. You'll always have something. So since you'll always have something, that something is enough to be considered protecting her Karen. So Amar Rav Huna Bar Chiya, Amar Shmuel, Halacha Kichananya. We paskin like Chananya, that the mother is considered the Karen and the baby is considered the Peiros, and that's what we're going to do. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, Afagav, Amar Shmuel, Alocha Kichananyo. So even though we just paskin that the mother is Karen and the baby is the Peri, Moide Chananyo, Chananyo will admit, Shem Nisgarsha, that if she does get divorced, Noisenes Domin Venoiteles, she gets to take the, now this is actually Machlokes Rishonim again, what we're talking about. But let's learn Rashi's pshat. Rashi learns that she can pay money and keep the baby of the Shifcha also, Mipnei Shvach Beis Aviyah, because that's considered something that comes from her father's house. Meaning, you know, there's a status of owning a slave. There's certainly a status of owning multiple slaves. It's that's considered, you know, the owning slaves is very wealthy. So therefore, that's her father's house. There's an expectation that this slaves are going to stay in her family. So therefore, even though you're right, technically, the vlad is considered peri and the husband has the right to use it and keep it the way he wants. However, she has a right to buy it. There's a takana over here. He has the right to buy it back from him. She has to pay for it. But she could buy back the child slave so that she could keep it as part of her family heirloom. As part of her family. That's the way Rashi learns. Some Rishonim learn that it's also even talking about the animals. But Rashi says it's specifically talking about the Shifcha. Right. Okay. This is when the slaves, you know, the concept existed. So Omar Rova, Omar Rav Nachman, Hechnisa loy eiz lechalbo. What about if she has a goat, which is being used for milk, right? Milk, goat milk. Verocha legizasa, and a sheep for the shearings, right? It grows wool. Vitarnagoilis lebeitzasa, and a chicken or a hen for its eggs. Vedeka lepeirosav, and a tree, a palm tree for the fruit. Over there, you continue, the husband gets to eat whatever it produces until the animal, tree, whatever it is, no longer exists. That's what Rava says in the name of Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Nachman ilo. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says, Ailo lo le glima, peira have a peira. So Ailo lo glima, she brings in a shirt, peira have the payers of that shirt are, so let's say she brings a shirt into the marriage, the husband gets to wear it until it's worn out. Okay, so we see that, because that is the revenue of a shirt. The point of a shirt is, the use of a shirt is, now the shirt is still the shirt, but the use of the shirt is to wear it, and he can wear it as much as he wants. Come on, who does that hold like that you could wear out the Karen? Ki haitano. It's like the following Tanya. Hamelech v'hachol. If you have salt and you have sand. Now what we're talking about over here, the salt that we're talking about over here is that they used to give, I don't know if you've ever seen the pictures, they dig these little ditches right along the beach and the water comes in and washes in to the beach, and then it's in the hot temperatures. It's very shallow so that the water dries out, and then you're left with a coating of salt. And then you scrape out the salt, and then you can sell the salt. And the chol is, you know, you dig up sand that's used for building construction. So harei zeh peiros. That's considered peiros because it'll continue to reproduce. It'll continue. There'll always be dirt, and there'll always be the salt. As long as the ocean keeps on washing in, it'll always come up with more. Okay, Hareza Peris. Peri shall gafris, michuvarois shall tsrif. Now what about when you're digging out tar? Or you're digging out, tsrif is alum or whatever it is. It's this type of ore, let's call it. It's a metal that you mine from the ground. Rav Meir says, listen, eventually that's going to run out. So the ore itself is the Karen, because eventually you'll mine it out to nothing, and she can't be left with nothing. So since she can't be left with nothing, so therefore we have to consider the mining, the product, to be the Karen. And the Chama in Paris, the Chama say, no, also, what are we going to do? Eventually, that is what the land is there for, that to produce. And that's what it produces. It produces the ore. It produces whatever it is that you're mining. Eventually it might run out, but the land is still there. The land is the Karen. And therefore the ore, I call it ore, whatever it is, the metal that you're, the metal or the oil or whatever it is that you're getting out of the land, that's considered the payers. So it's a machlekes over here, what we consider the land. Okay, moving along. So we said when we learned the Mishnah that Rav Shimon and the Chacham seem similar. Rav Shimon and Ramakam Shiyafa Koichai. So the Rav Shimon also says that if it's considered attached to the ground when she brings it in, right? So that if it's still considered attached to the ground, it's considered the husband's because it will eventually become his. So the Rav Shimon and the Chachamim are saying, so the Gemara says, Rav Shimon Hainu Tanakama, he's also saying the same thing, that money, that whatever is, comes in attached to the ground is considered his because eventually that's the payrus will be produced. They both say the same thing. So Amarava Mechubarim B'Shas Yitzia Ikavenav. So the Nafkamina is, you're right, not so much on the what she brings into the marriage, it's more so what happens at the end of the marriage. At the end of the marriage, those payers that are still, let's say he gets divorced during the high season when before everything, you know, when the wheat is grown but not yet harvested, so that is considered, so according to Reb Shimon, that would go to her. It's mamish part of the karka, and it would go to her. That's what Rav Shimon says. It's literally attached to the karka. The Chachamim don't say what the deal would be over there. So the Chachamim would actually argue, and they'd say, no, that he gets to keep it, since it was grown during his time of ownership and his jurisdiction, so he would keep it. That would be the machlekes between the Chachamim and Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon is easy to remember because Rav Shimon is consistent. If it was considered the husband's on the way in, it's considered the wife's on the way out. But the Chachamim make a difference and say on the way in, it's considered his because it's still attached to the ground and then it will become produce. But on the way out, he cultivated it. He grew it. So therefore, he gets to keep it also. So he gets it both ways, according to the Chachamim. So the bottom line is over here, just so that, I mean, this Gemara is a lot of examples, a lot of nuances. The bottom line is that the wife keeps the Karen, the revenue belongs to the husband, and what's defined as the Karen is usually, again, there's some machlekes in over here, but usually what's the Karen is, as long as she's left with something. That's really the main rule. Again, there are some nuances of a difference, but the main rule is, as long as she has something left from the item that she brought in, it will, so to speak, continuously exist, or has a potential of continuously existing, so then that's considered the Karen, and what it produces, the revenue from that, is considered the Peri. Okay. Let's continue moving on. Next Mishnah. Naflala avodim v'shifchas zekenim. What if she brings into the marriage older slaves, which we know they're not gonna last very long, so yimkaru, so if you want to keep it, the only way to deal with it is yimkaru, the husband would have to sell it, the yilakach ben karko, and he'll buy other land, so that the husband can get the payers out of it. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, you cannot sell the slaves she brings in, even though they're not going to last forever, and the husband's not going to get too much out of it. Those are things, again, there's this connection that it's considered your property, is associated with your family, so you get to keep it. And she can insist that he doesn't sell it. Similarly, let's say they bring in an old orchard where it's not going to continue forever. So also, you might as well sell it now, get whatever you can out of it, and buy something else which will last. And it'll get the papers. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, she can say, don't sell it. No, this orchard, this land is considered in my field, in my family. She has a right to veto the sale and say, don't sell it and keep it. And so if he only gets it for a short amount of time, he'll get it for a short amount of time. Zok to Gemara. Amar Rav Kahana, Amar Rav. Machloikes shenaflu besode shalof. Here we're talking about, when we talk about the old orchard, we're talking about where the orchard exists in her field. She owns the land and she also owns the vines. So that's why we can say she can insist that don't sell it, because at the end, even when they eventually die out, I'll still have the land, we'll do something else. Avo. Besode she'enis shalof. But if she doesn't own the field, all she owns is the vines themselves, and the vines are about to dry out and get you nothing. Divrei Akol Timkor, everybody agrees that you should sell it. Mishum de Kalkalya Karno, because eventually you're going to be left with nothing. Because you don't own the land, all you own is the tree. The tree dies, you have nothing. So therefore, that's not something that's sustainable. It's not sustainable, you should just sell it. However, Maskeflo Rabbi Yosef says, Hare Avodim Shivchois, you talked about the vines, but we didn't talk about the first case in the Mishnah, which were like the slaves. So let's talk about the slaves, Avodim Shivchois, the Chisod Shayna Shalom Adami. They're not going to last forever. Nobody lives forever. So they're not going to last, and she's going to be left with nothing. Upligi. And over there, the Chachamim argue, and they say that, even in that case, even Rav Shimon Gamliel over there says she can have a right to insist not to sell it. Now we know that they're eventually going to die and you're going to be left with nothing. So the same thing over here also. The orchard also, she could say, it's going to die and I'll be left with nothing. That's that. So, what's the difference? Eli Yitmar, Hochi Yitmar. What he meant to say is like this. Amar Rav Kahana, Amar Rav Machloikis Besoda She'ena Shalom. And Echanami, they argue in the first place about whether or not she can insist on not selling when she only owns the vines and not the field. Abba Besoda Shalom. But when it belongs to, when she owns the field itself, Divrei HaKol Loisimka. Then everybody agrees, even the Chachamim agree that he cannot sell it, even though it's old now. Because the field belongs to her, the family, they keep it in the family, he doesn't have the right to sell it out of the family. Okay? So we switched around the Machlekas. Originally we thought the Machlekas was on the vines themselves. But now we're saying, originally we thought that on the vines themselves everybody would agree, you might as well sell it, otherwise she'll be left with nothing. Here we're saying, no, that is the case, the machloikas, whether or not she has the right to insist not to sell. But when you're going to be left with the field anyway, everybody agrees that you can't sell because we want to continue to have the field. So the vines will die out and then eventually you'll have just be left with the field and you'll use the field for whatever it's worth. That's the maskon of the Gemara. Next Mishnah, the Mishnah says, "Hamoitzi hoitza al nichsei ishtoy." Okay, so till now we've been talking about what belongs to the husband, what the husband gets to use. So let's assume we know what that is. The husband gets a thing. He gets this thing, and okay, so what's he wants the revenue? He gets the revenue, so obviously it's worth it for him to invest. So hamoitzi hoitza means he puts value al nichsei ishtoy. And he invests a lot of money to improve the property. If he spent a lot of money on improvements and all he did, let's say it was a lot of money and then there was a short marriage, so he only took out a very little bit from the value. Kimo v'ochel harbe, or even the other way around, it doesn't matter. Even if he invested very little and he got an abundance of revenue, Masha hoitzi masha ochel ochel. We don't go through the cheshbon. If this marriage ends, they get divorced and he has to return it back to her. Whatever he got, he got. Whatever he spent, he spent. You know, those were the risks that he took. And if he benefited, great. If he lost, too bad. Now, hoitzi the loy ochel. But let's say he did the investments, and let's say it was a really short marriage, and he never saw a penny of profit out of this. Yishova kama hoitzavi ito. So then in Chanami, he could say, listen, I did all the improvements, and I got nothing out of this. I was entitled to get something. I didn't invest for nothing. So then he could swear what his investment was, and he has a right to return of the investment. Doesn't get any profit, but he does have a right to say, you know, I invested $1 million in renovations. He gets his $1 million back. But he doesn't get any of the profits. Now, interesting question. The Gemara asks on the bottom line of Ayin Tes. The Gemara asks for Kama Kimo. How much is a little bit? He has to get as long as he gets something, whatever something. Now, what's something? So, Amar Ravasi Afilu Gargoyres Achas. Even if you get one grain, one date. As long as he got it in a good way, right? In other words, you get your first dividend, you buy a stock, and you get your $2 dividend. Okay, you got a dividend. That's it. The expectation is you'll own AT&T forever, and $2 over, you know, over 100 years will add up. But you got your dividend check. That's all you need. It doesn't matter that it's not a lot of money. Amar Abba, we're going to do three lines over here on the top of Pei Amud Aleph, and then we'll stop. So now on the top, Amar Reb Abba. So Reb Abba says, Amri Bei Rav. They said in the Yeshiva, Afilu Shigra De Tamri. Even a clump of dates. They used to have this, the idea, they used to mush all the dates together, and that's how they used to sell it. I don't know, you can still buy them like that, where you buy them in these circular plastic things where all the dates are like all, they make them into like a half wheel or a wheel, so they push them all together, even if that's what he got. Okay, the point is that he got something. It's not a lot. They pushed together, he got his dates. So, Bayi Rabbi Bibi, again, I'm just doing three lines here. Bayi Rabbi Bibi, Chavsa de Tamri Mai. If a date versus the fig. So the Chavsa de Tamri Mai, the Gemara's question over here is, what if you made it into beer or something like that, and you're left with the remnants, and you're left with those seeds, is that considered enough? He's getting something. His mom is nothing. He's getting the dregs of the, right? Literally, he's getting the dregs of the barrel. But that's what he's getting. But he's getting something. And the Gemara says, Teku. Lo yoch l'derech kovid mai. What if, again, because the Gemara says, as long as you get something, but it has to be derech kovid. So what if you didn't eat it derech kovid? You know, you one time you just stuffed something in your face. You ate a date off the ground. So now, does that count? Amar ula pligi ba trei amaroi b'marovo anachanami it's a machlekes chad amar b'cheiser v'chad amar b'chedinner. He says, Anachanami, even if you didn't eat it derech kovid, there is a certain amount. You can't eat $1,000 worth and say, well, I wasn't really paying attention, so it doesn't count. Eventually, at some point, you've eaten enough, even not, so to speak, making a big deal about it, even not paying attention, that's still considered you got it. And again, it's machlekes in the value of an iser or a dinner, which is much more. But the point is that if you got a value, if you got a kovedik of value, even if you didn't eat it necessarily in the most kovedik way, as I said, you might have just grabbed it as you're walking by and put it in your mouth. If you had you ate enough of those over the course of time, then that's considered you got your receipt, even though obviously it's a very, very small amount versus the amount that you might have invested. Okay, so that, we're going to stop over here, and we'll continue next time.